Welcome to the Social Podcast, where no discussion or debate is off limits.
Hello and welcome to The Social. We got a great show for you today, and we're starting with a major news story. The deadline is looming for many healthcare workers across the country required to get a mandatory COVID-19 vaccine. And experts warn that there could be major staffing shortages. So what are your concerns around this? I imagine there are plenty, huh?
Yeah, I thought we lived in Canada, the country with one of the best healthcare systems in the world. So what exactly is going on here? Listen, it's not a surprise. This is terrifying news. And I think that a lot of people in healthcare will tell you we had a problem in healthcare across this country well before the pandemic. We're just seeing all the cracks go wide open right now. But I got to say, I don't want to fearmonger, but it's a little terrifying because on the other side of every nurse or nurse practitioner or healthcare worker that's not vaccinated, there's a human that they could be caring for. So that's really, really scary. And there's been a couple times during this pandemic, specifically with my parents, where we had a really hard time accessing their family doctor. And it was scary because my parents are older. And so I have since found them a new doctor who's way more accessible. But what if I couldn't? What if I couldn't navigate the system? Like, then what happens?
Yes.
And we have an aging demographic in Canada. So this is a problem today, but it's only going to become a worse problem. So my takeaway from this news is do everything in my power to stay as healthy as I can so I don't have to depend on the healthcare system. Guys, you guys know this. I am currently obsessed with blue zones of the world where they live to like 100 and longevity research and, you know, all these things, because I'm just thinking, what if this is not the last pandemic? And what if we can just try to ease off the need to depend on a healthcare system that's cracking at the seams? It's pretty scary stuff.
Mm-hmm. AG, what do you think?
You know, I think it's really important to keep this kind of a macro perspective and read the story in context, because, you know, you guys know I have been working in the United States during this pandemic, and I'm not exactly sure about the numbers here in Canada, but I know when this story was out in the States about healthcare workers deciding not to get vaccinated, one of the things that was forgotten is the fact that it does not reflect the majority of medical workers. So in the United States, I think in September, it was something like 95% of doctors were completely vaccinated. Almost 90% of nurses were completely vaccinated. So yes, I understand what Mel is saying, and I completely agree. You don't want, you know, nobody wants that small percentage that isn't vaccinated to be the ones looking after you or your family members if they end up in the hospital. Warranted. But it's really important, I think, to understand the narrative of this and what narrative is being pushed, because I think it can actually sow seeds of fear in the public. Uh-huh. That they think that the majority of healthcare workers are the ones not getting vaccinated, when that's not in fact true.
I'll be honest, I have not been, the last 2 months have been a little hairy for me because my mom's been actually in the hospital for a month and in a rehabilitation center for the next month. So I feel like I'm slow to the game and thought that this had already been mandated because I haven't been keeping up with the news. So finding out about this story today, it was kind of like slow clap. You mean like after our federal workers have been mandated, after we've been mandated, after going to a restaurant patron has to be double vaxxed? It was kind of like, why did this take so long? And as you said, Mel, these people are working side by side with our population's most vulnerable. I'm really relieved that my mom was at a hospital and thank goodness so many hospitals across this country have made up their own mandates, you know, and that most medical professionals in this country believe in vaccinations, to your point, AJ.
Yeah, I think that it's a great point, AJ, that it is a small minority. I think it's just for certain people, and I would include myself in there, the small minority can cause a major disruption.
Yeah.
And I think that is like the reality of it. Mel talked before about the small minority of people who are protesting, right? Like they represent like a small minority of Canadians, but their protests either are being covered by the news in a way that is an outsize, like it exaggerates how many of them are out there, but their protests also have a major inconvenience. Like they're not protesting in places that you know, are where you should be protesting. They were protesting at times outside of hospitals. And so in that case, when that was happening, my ma has appointments with her specialist at hospitals at least once a week. So I was already nervous. She has a disability. At that moment, I was like, are you going to get in the way of my ma going to the hospital and getting treatment? Because if that is the case, it's not going to go down like that.
No.
Like there is, mm-hmm. I will just tell you right there. I'll leave it there. So now when we're talking about healthcare workers, well, my ma is scheduled for some serious treatment. She has a chronic disease. It's a very serious disease. It's a potentially fatal disease. So will her treatment be delayed because of these healthcare shortages? Right? So to AJ's point, it is a small percentage that has outsized disruptive consequences. And if my mom's treatment is going to be delayed and her condition worsens, like, who is going to ever, and all the other families affected by this, who is going to an answer to that? And I think that is why there are people like me who are very concerned about what the ramifications and the consequences will be.
And you know what, Lainey, you have every reason to be. Like, I have chills just thinking about when you're speaking, how many of my family members are in the same boat. Yeah. I think so many people watching feel your passion. And for those of you who want to keep this conversation going, please keep it going on social. We would love to hear from you. I am going to move this on to something a little bit different now. And it's all about coffee table books. Okay, so hear me out here. Are coffee table books pretentious? Interior designers told the Wall Street Journal that they're a good way to reflect your personality. But do you think they are?
Well, they're pretentious for everyone else, unless they're your coffee table books, right? Okay, Simon has had like a really bad habit of, you know, those discount tables that you see at bookstores where it's like $120 picture book that's marked down to 20. He buys them and he brings them home, and I'd get so mad because, like, we don't open them up. They just sit on a shelf. But now we actually have a coffee table that we don't eat dinner at. So he's been able to curate his little pile of picture books. And to be honest, we have used them. We sit in our comfy chairs and we open them up with coffee or a cocktail. But that's key, I think. Like, when you see those picture table books and there's no place to sit and you're afraid to touch them, that's kind of like
antithetical.
Antithetical, Lainey. That's the word.
But do you have the go-to coffee table books? That's the question. Because there was an article, I think, in Vogue that I read a while ago, and there is actually like a list of the coffee table books you're supposed to have in a sophisticated home.
Oh, hence the pretentious.
Right. And they include like the Tom Ford book, Architectural Digest is in there, the Chanel book. There's a book called Beaches. And so, I mean, and the funny thing is I read this article and I was like, really? There's like a, you know, there's like, everyone knows they have to have like a Birkin bag or a Gucci belt. Like, there's these things in fashion you're supposed to have, but I didn't realize coffee tables had their own like fashion, high-end fashion selection. And I think I started noticing it lately. And maybe you will too, now that I've told you what the books are. I've noticed it in everyone's influencer stories. Like, when you look at influencers showing their homes, they all have the Tom Ford book. I would bet any money that Mel probably has at least one of those books on her coffee table.
Maybe. I'll show you a picture of what's on my coffee, like, I guess, under my coffee table right now.
Oh, that's a nice
so
display.
That is my wedding album at the bottom. Everything Gucci, Madonna, and Estee Lauder. I never bought any of these. These were all gifted to me. So somebody thought these would be great coffee books for me. So I'm great. And that was what I was thinking, Jess, when you were talking, is that, you know, Simon is curating these. I never curated those. So now I'm thinking, what do people think of me? And what do I want them to think of me? Do I care what they think of me? But when I do go to other people's houses, I am looking, going, are you actually reading these? Or do you want me to just think that you are reading these, that your cultured fashion status, all those things. And that therein lies the dichotomy. Who are you really, according to your coffee table books?
Well, I know people are going to weigh in on this. So according to the fashion editor at The Guardian, cleavage is over and it's time to invest in crop tops because we're living in the age of abs. What do you think of this latest trend?
No. I am so not into this at all. I am like, the idea of showing my midriff is something I was hoping died with my 20s. I mean, I'm so, this gives me such anxiety to do this. And me and my like Middle Eastern belly dancing body just do not support this whatsoever.
What about, okay, so you, you don't support the abs, then were you pro cleave?
No, okay, so here's my thing, and this is my issue, is I actually don't like that this is tied to the cleavage thing, like cleavage is out and this is in, and I'll tell you why, because I feel like we're attaching an anti-cleavage narrative to this, which as a naturally big-breasted woman, okay, I actually have an issue with, because
justice
I feel like...
cleavage.
Justice for cleavage, 100%. Okay, let's make that hashtag trend today, people, and I'll tell you why. Because for all of us busty women, I feel like my entire life, we're either sexualized or we're being shamed for our cleavage. And like, you know, these girls are heavy. I carry them around everywhere. If I'm wearing like a V-neck shirt and a little cleave is showing, that's not my fault, right? It's just there. And so I kind of feel like even this idea of like, okay, cleavage is out and abs are in. Like, what happened to the body positivity movement that we were all talking about last month?
This is, I was about to say, like, I feel like this is whiplash for people who've been in the pandemic for 18 months, eating everything in sight. Like, how mean to do this to anybody, and especially women? Because we're still in this pandemic, slowly coming out. And now you're like, everybody show your midriff. It seems so misogynist. I just sit there and going, ew, that is really mean.
But when I don't get Mel, like, I don't like the headline that it says, like, I'd be willing to show just that little bit, you know, above the belly button. Because below the belly button, you know, maybe you get a little insecure about the paunchy paunch. But above the belly button, I think that's a really beautiful spot on a lot of people. What gets me is that they're saying you have to have killer abs. Like, I need abs that are capable of murdering someone in order to show them. Why can't I just show that nice little skin part?
Right. Again, yeah. Misogynist. It's misogynist. Guys, you guys know I would live in crop tops all day and all night. Yeah. Like, who am I kidding? I do live in crop tops all day and all night. And so obviously for me, I'm like, oh yeah, this is great. Free the abs. But obviously any time that we are making body parts trendy or not trendy, it is deeply, deeply problematic. And this is coming from someone who, listen, I love to show them off. I love to work out and show off my work. But at the same time, to say to a woman, like, show this, don't show this, I'm just not down for it. And to your point, Aaliyah Jasmine, about one is in and one is out, mm-hmm, it's like the idea of chest is really interesting to me because, you know, a lot of people watched SNL this past weekend with Kim Kardashian. And I don't know if you noticed, but to me, because I am someone who has breast implants, it's something that I look at in other women. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, is Kim K going smaller because they don't seem to be as large? Which made me say for a second, maybe there is truth to this headline that it's no longer boobs and it's just about abs and her tiny, tiny, eeny, tiny waist. And if there's one thing that I will say for me is that lately I've been having that discussion with my body and myself about maybe removing my implants long before this article. For a couple years, I've been really deeply thinking about it. So wow. I'd be a hypocrite to be like, oh yeah, abs are in and boobs are out. It's like, I'd be a total hypocrite. I have no legs to stand on this. But I think that anything that's going to help women love ourselves as we are is definitely something to look at. So again, going back to my thesis, this is misogynist on every front.
Love you, Mel.
Love you.
Free the boob. And the ab.
Free the
free
boob.
The whole.
Free the boob.
And doesn't have to be a killer ab. It can be a pacifier ab. Abs can
sure.
be pacifist.
Just a nice,
peace-loving
sure,
ab.
Absolutely.
Okay? No murder
exactly.
ab.
Just one ab.
Amen
one ab.
To that. Amen to that. Well, listen, on the other side of this, so Demi Lovato, she's been very much about body positivity and all kinds of things. But Demi Lovato is saying it is derogatory to call extraterrestrials, stay with me, aliens. They prefer to use the term ETs. There's your 80s reference, ladies and gentlemen. Is this wokeness going too far? Literally out of this world.
I don't think that Demi is going to be able to remove the word alien in reference to extraterrestrials from our cultural vocabulary. But it does bring up an interesting conversation about the conversation that we might have with extraterrestrials. Like, what do they want to be called? And what do they call us? Like, are we aliens to extraterrestrials? Because in theory, we're not them. We're the other.
Mm-hmm.
So aren't
yeah, but
we
they're visiting
the aliens?
Us.
Like, the universe is quite huge. Earth is only a small, like, an infinitesimal part of the universe. So in technically, we are aliens to lots and lots of other extraterrestrials. We are extraterrestrials,
we're
too.
Extraterrestrials
we're ETs.
Too. We're all ETs. Is that the point here?
Yeah,
we just also
but
wait
is it,
to
but
ask
are we,
them?
But would they call us aliens when they're visiting us? And listen, I believe they are. But if we're visiting them, like we're throwing up all these machines on Mars,
yeah.
then they would look at it and maybe say, okay, that's an alien because that's from out there visiting us.
With
this
our
is our
killer
homeland.
Abs. We're going to attack space
right.
with our killer abs, our non-pacifist abs. That's why abs should not be killer.
Subscribe to The Social Podcast so you don't miss a fiery debate. Until next time, socialites.